All right, good morning. Welcome into the program live from Los Angeles, California. Broadcast across this beautiful country. I am Bill Ryder. Appreciate you listening. Phone number on the show if you want to call us. Lend your voice to the program. 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4ISN. Social media, sports, Ryder Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R, Ryan Hickey, Ryan underscore Hickey, number 3. We will check in on Ryan's pursuit of Happy Gilmore, 2. We'll see if he found it. We'll see if he tracked it down. Maybe he'll give us a review. Nick Saban's got some jokes. I'm excited to let you listen to this this clip of Nick Saban, because this is the version of the guy that I got to know a little bit when I would spend some time in Tuscaloosa reporting on him. The non-scary side of the greatest college football coach of all time. Joe Flacco is not the greatest anything of all time, but he is the starter with the Browns. We'll talk about that. There's some arch buzz that is continuing to build. We'll get into the worst quarterback situations in the NFL. First time on the program, Zach Johnson will join us. Covers the Browns and all their drama and their quarterback room. For The Athletic, we'll do buy or sell. A lot of things to unpack. I was, unfortunately, I hope you didn't have to, watching the Bengals preseason game yesterday. And by the way, there's many services we offer here on the show. There's many things that we provide to you on the program. One of them is watching these preseason games when you don't have to. This isn't even my take, but I just want to say we've talked a lot over the last many months, weeks, yesterday, about college football expansion and whether that should occur and whether, you know, a 12 to 16 model makes sense. If you're the Big Ten, a 12 to 16 greed fest hit makes sense. Can I just suggest that an NFL contraction should take place? Can we just eliminate preseason games after this? I normally kind of roll my eyes when every year different coaches or guys come out and say, I don't really want to do this. It's meaningless. Maybe we should do less games. I'm going to talk to you about the Bengals. I'm going to talk to you about Trey Hendrickson. There is some truth to decoding this. But these games are really hard to watch. And I'm not going to pretend they're exciting. I was watching a clip of a NFL broadcaster this morning. And he was doing a big-time sports show. And he was trying to, this incredible Bengals game. It wasn't amazing. None of these games are that amazing. The interest level is trying to watch things that we don't know are going to be true or not. Shador Sanders, interesting. Caleb Williams, to a degree, interesting. But the real magic kicks off in 2.5 weeks. But leave it to Cincinnati in a preseason game that should be about getting some reps here and there. In a game where even Zach Taylor said, yeah, we didn't really run anything. We just kind of told the guys to go out there and, you know, mess around. The biggest source of dysfunction, maybe in the NFL, and certainly for a contending team in the National Football League, the ownership and the culture and the leadership of that Cincinnati Bengals team was on sharp display. Because the starters on defense didn't play a ton of the game. They did play some. But again, in that moment where Cincinnati at least is putting some guys out there, do you know who wasn't there? He was watching. He talked to ESPN before the game, Trey Hendrickson. Now, Hendrickson's in a hold-in, which is semantics, whatever, hold-in, hold-out. The man wants to get paid. The Bengals have been unwilling to do that. There have been reports, probably meant to pressure one side or the other, that Cincinnati is taking phone calls, is open to the idea of trading their defensive superstar, one of the best two or three defensive players in the game last year. And last night, in a preseason game that nobody will remember otherwise, was a reminder, was a sign from the football gods to Mike Brown, not the coach, the guy that owns the Bengals, to get your you-know-what together and pay this man his money. So Hendrickson, and this has been out there a little bit, but just to give you the details, he let ESPN know before the game that it's not the yearly amount, it's not the average annual salary that they have an issue on, that they're at a crossroads on. It's the guaranteed money. And this makes sense. the market is more or less set by position for guys at a certain skill level, and the guaranteed money is the actual money you're going to have to pay over the life of a contract. It's the amount of money that the NFL agents I know and the NBA agents I know, but especially the NFL agents because it's a different deal, they're not guaranteed unless it's the guaranteed portion, really focus on. And as if the football gods were out there just trying to showcase to Cincinnati and remind them that perhaps you should pay your most important defensive player in a situation where you have a championship window, in a situation where, by the way, Joe Burrow looked pretty good in his limited time, it would be the fact that this Bengals defense, again, I know it's preseason, I got it, allowed two very quick touchdown drives with their starters on the field. Only Trey Hendrickson wasn't one of those guys because he was talking to an ESPN reporter about how those cheap you-know-whats won't give him the money that he deserves, won't guarantee his money. Now, there's a world where this gets resolved. We've seen Dak Prescott, we've seen a multitude of people around the NFL, we've seen several Bengals players over the last few years get deals in the closing weeks, days, hours of the NFL regular season coming to pass. Maybe the Bengals will buckle here. Maybe they'll swerve. In fact, Joe Burrow, who credits him, at least he kind of talked about this a little bit, pointed out that there's a history, there's a pattern where the Trey Hendricksons of the world eventually get paid just before the season gets underway.
Deals with us have gotten done closer to week one. I signed on the Thursday before the first game. Jamar's started to pick up, you know, that week before last year too. And, you know, we were able to get T and Jamar done early this year, so that was great. But I think historically the way we've done business is, you know, that tends to pick up here in the next 2 weeks, so we'll see.
That's true. Here's another way the Bengals tend to do business. They tend, despite being one of the actual legitimate Super Bowl contenders in the NFL, and I think the team, and I bring this up a lot, but it's worth saying, we take for granted the Chiefs' greatness, which means we take for granted the Bengals' superpower in being the only team that is a kryptonite to that. Cincinnati's good enough to beat Kansas City. They're not just good enough to beat everybody else. Historically, they can do it. Their shortcoming, the thing that hobbles them, the most likely obstacle to Cincinnati having the success they want at the start of a season, that's lifting that trophy, is not the Kansas City Chiefs. They might be the only team in the National Football League whose biggest obstacle to championship glory isn't Kansas City. It's the first 4 weeks of the season. Every year the Bengals start badly. Every year they get out of the gate slowly. Now, there's other things. Every team has weaknesses. The Bengals are not very good defensively, and that's despite the fact that Hendrickson's been a beast over the last 2 years. He's earned the money. I don't know the guaranteed amount that he wants, but unless he wants a Deshaun Watson deal where every dollar is guaranteed, and breaking news, he doesn't. These cheap you-know-whats, that's when I'd be swearing, but I can't because it's radio and I respect you and I respect the government and I don't want to get in trouble and I don't want to lose my job. These cheap you-know-whats won't pay him the money he's worth, that he deserves. And the thing about Cincinnati is, and it's such a catch-22, it's so bizarre, it almost certainly speaks to the culture of this football team. They always shoot themselves in the foot to start the year. Now, maybe they're looking at the schedule and they're saying, you know what, we can skate a little bit, we'll be fine, because the start is not terribly brutal at the beginning. They open at home against the Browns, which, by the way, interesting football game. I think Cincinnati is a legit playoff-level team if Trey Hendrickson's on the field. I think they're a legit contestant in the AFC to win multiple playoff games. There's a lot of those, though, as we've discussed. It's not that it's easy, but they're that level. And I think the Browns are going to be basic. I think Joe Flacco and the other 31 quarterbacks they drafted this year in their quarterback room are probably going to add up to a so-so reality. That is a game, and it's in Cincinnati, that the Bengals should win. Week two, they play the Jags. Again, you tell me, we fast forward to December, and you tell me the Browns or the Jags, one of those two teams, are really good and on track for 11 wins, I'm going to be mildly surprised, but I won't be utterly shocked because these things happen in the National Football League. The Browns have some talent, and I keep waiting for the quarterback in Jacksonville to figure it out and shake off the residual awfulness that Urban Meyer introduced into his career. Poor Trevor Lawrence. But those are games that Cincinnati maybe that should win, probably should win. It gets a little trickier after that, probably. At Vikings, we'll talk Vikings some point next week, maybe later in the show, because I'm I go back and forth on what I think they're going to be. They have a new quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. Then you go at Broncos. Another sexy pick this year to be good. Without Trey Hendrickson, without a defense that's particularly good, with a defense that's basically had its starters out there for limited time this year and has seen itself get scored on three times, basically almost every encounter, you're playing with fire. And the thing that struck me yesterday in watching that game, other than, if I'm being honest with you, how bad preseason NFL games are. And it, look, I'm watching it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd rather eat, you know, bad spaghetti than nothing at all. But the thing that struck me is the dysfunction of the Bengals and how it's almost a feature and not a bug. Every time we're dealing with this football team, it feels like they are going out of their way to undercut the winning possibilities at the highest level Joe Burrow has brought them. This team, this quarterback, this coach, this general group have made a Super Bowl. They have beaten the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City in an AFC Championship game. And I know how good the Bills are. Now I know how good the Ravens are. And I know people like the Chargers and people like the Broncos. And the Steelers are going to be interesting. And we talk about this a lot. The AFC is amazing. And obviously the Chiefs are the team to beat. The Bengals should be every year in the same tier and category as Buffalo and Baltimore. Every year we get into the conversation of, is there something wrong with the coach in Buffalo that he can't get over the hill? Is there something wrong with Lamar Jackson that he can't get over the hill? We are so certain that Cincinnati's just not going to do it. Or they get off to such a bad start they go under the radar, we don't even take the time to criticize their lack of accomplishment. Because it's a built-in part of their reality. And Trey Hendrickson, sitting there on the sideline, talking to ESPN reporters about his cheap owners, not practicing with his team, not being out there, not being sharp as part of the problem. Even if they give him his money in the lead-up to the game, and I think they will, there's no team on the face of the earth that I can really imagine would trade one of the best players in the NFL because they won't guarantee him the money that you should, that is market value, other than maybe the Bengals. I don't think he's actually getting traded. I think he's actually going to get paid. What is the point here? To undercut everything? I understand it's a problem that isn't Joe Burrow's fault. And credit him for answering. It's not Zach Taylor's fault. In fact, Zach Taylor, if you want to play armchair psychologist, the best part of preseason games is the post game, because these guys are all so pissed off being asked about the things that actually matter, which is not the game. No one goes, Zach, you guys ran that play in the third quarter, and he's like, oh yeah, no. Even Zach Taylor doesn't care about the game. But he certainly got a little frustrated being asked reasonably about what in the holy hell's going on with Trey Hendrickson.
There was a report yesterday that you guys are actively listening to teams regarding Trey Hendrickson.
I got nothing to do with that.
He's just the most important player on my defense, and if I don't have him, I can't win anything, and maybe someday I'll get fired and I'll have to be a coordinator again. I got nothing to do with that. Like, again, I've said it 50 times, and I'll let Zach Taylor say it too. It's a preseason game. It doesn't matter a lot. You have to look into that crystal ball on your television to kind of see what's there to see. Is Joe Burrow having a nice little touchdown pass? Is that significant? Sure. Great. Okay. Fine. Is this or that guy playing well or not important? I don't really know that it is in the preseason. A lot of guys, not Jamar Chase, he actually likes to play in these games. A lot of guys will tell you that practice is more important. Coaches will tell you that, certainly. But the reminder, the continuation of Hendrickson not being out there, the fact that the Bengals defense looked like garbage without him out there is problematic. Now, in fair counterpoint, Zach Taylor basically said after the game, yeah, man, we weren't trying.
We're not pushing the envelope with what we're asking them to do right now. Playing as close to the vest as possible. Obviously, we shouldn't have given up big runs like that. So those are things that we have to clean up. You know, I think there's really been about three of them so far in these two games. So those are things that we don't want and we can avoid. And whatever the call is, we should do a better job at that. But at the same time, I know what I see every day in practice, and I'm excited about the direction of our defense.
I mean, translation is, we need to be able to tackle. That'll be easy. We didn't run any plays or do anything serious, and I don't care about this. I care about practice. You know what he does care about? Trey Hendrickson not getting paid. And maybe, probably, perhaps, in a week and a half to 2 weeks, when we get right on the eve and maybe the day of the Bengals' first game, we will come on the radio or come on the radio the next day and say, all right, the Bengals paid him and they guaranteed the money that was kind of in line. Why not do it now? Why not let the guy be sharp? Why not let the guy prepare? Why not look at your own history and your extraordinarily slow starts in NFL seasons where you're playing catch-up the whole year and not just risking the opportunity to be in the playoffs, but using a lot of that energy and that playoff desperation in December instead of January? Because the Bengals are the Bengals. One thing I've learned in my medium-term life is that it takes two to tango in a relationship. And it doesn't matter. I have a lot of friends who've gotten divorced. Ryan's getting married soon. I hope he doesn't have a lot of friends that get divorced. But that's part. Here's the lesson. It doesn't matter if one of the people in a partnership are great, smart, funny, great at bringing down the opposing quarterback, second the previous year in defensive player of the year, charming, just wants to get, you know, paid fairly. If the other person's a hot damn mess, if the other person's a disaster, if the other person can't get their bleep together, if the other person can't learn from their mistakes, it's going to be messy and it's going to end badly. And sometimes that person, maybe Trey Hendrickson, stays in the relationship anyway. Maybe you do it for the kids or Cincinnati fans or Joe Burrow, Joey B. I don't know why you stay in those relationships. It doesn't mean the relationship gets good. It just means you get to suffer through misery. The Bengals are a terrible life partner for football players. And that's what was on display last night in that preseason game. All right, 888-710-4ISN. Did Ryan Hickey watch Happy Gilmore for you? Does he care about you, audience member? We are going to find out. We're also going to listen to Nick Saban live his best life. That's next here on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
I think you versus pop culture is a good rivalry.
Pop culture right now is kicking my ass.
It's not really a rivalry. You guys just ignore each other. You act like the other doesn't exist.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Yesterday, one of you that are listening, thank you for letting us hang out with you. Thanks for spending time with us here on Ryder Than You. One of you hit me up on instant messaging on X, I think is where it was. Those are open, by the way. Some of you hit me up on Facebook. I never open that app. So X is going to be a better way to communicate. And speaking of which, if you want to do a survivor pool in the NFL with a bunch of us and listeners, hit me up. We got to get a lot of people to do it, so we'll see if we do it. One of you hit me up and told me how much you like Ryan. How much you think Ryan's a nice guy. And we're about to test whether you were right or wrong. Because Ryan's mission, his assignment, his job for you was to watch Happy Gilmore 2. Said he'd do it. Doesn't want to, but a person who cares about the audience would do that. Let's go check and see if he does. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm wonderful, man. Thank you for asking that question.
Of course. You look very tan today.
Thank you.
Have you been losing weight recently? You look great.
I just told you that. I've lost 14 pounds. Good try. That means you probably have one. How
are your kids?
My kids are great. How was HG2? How was Happy Gilmore 2?
Right out of questions. From the reviews I've seen, not good.
Oh, no.
The first one was really good.
Come on.
The first one was really good. Wow. Happy Gilmore 1 was great. I'm afraid I don't want to ruin that by watching 2 and
having that. You've already ruined much. Our memory of you, and you're still here. Okay.
My culture is just not strong. I just live in the world where I accept my lack of pop culture reference and knowledge.
You lied to the audience, and you told them you loathe them. But I don't, wherever you are listening.
Well, the clock's still ticking. The door is not closed. The movie's still on Netflix. It hasn't gone away permanently. I can still make good. I don't want to be a liar. I love the audience. I respect the audience.
Let me tell you a story. This is a long time ago, when Nick Saban first went to, when he first went to Alabama, people forget this. Remember, maybe you're too young. He had failed miserably in one season with the Dolphins, and he told some joke he wasn't supposed to, and the whole thing was just a mess. And he went to Tuscaloosa, and it was a big hire for Alabama, and obviously they spent a lot of money, and the boosters were excited, but it wasn't a guarantee he was going to be successful. And most people, you know, what are now the Josh Pates of the world, the experts, then thought, okay, well, he'll probably do it, but not year one. And I rolled into his office, and I went into his office for a one-hour conversation that was incredibly confrontational. I still listen to the tape sometimes because I think it's funny. He told me I was stupid. My questions were dumb. But I was pretty young and obnoxiously confrontational myself. So we went back and forth. And then at the end, he decided to teach me how to golf. And then he whispered in my ear, make it a positive story. And started giggling. And then I asked him if I could follow him around Tuscaloosa for the week, and he said, what the hell, do whatever you want. And I saw this really funny side of him. Look, he's intimidating, and that was not an easy interview, but there was this crazy charisma where he would be, he's the good cop and the bad cop. He was, as a coach, the bad cop, the bad cop, the bad cop, the good cop, the bad cop, the good cop. He was all of it. And there was this clip that is amazing, because if you remember, there was a rumor from one of his former quarterbacks, now a broadcaster, that Saban might come back to coaching. And this clip, it's funny, so I want to play it for you. I also think it offers some insight. And you see more of this from guys when they retire who are football coaches. This it right here is the real charming, funny, but still slightly menacing Nick Saban.
So, Coach, what do you say to the rumors that you are returning to the sidelines to coach?
You know, I don't know where that came from. You know, Greg McElroy played quarterback for us. And if it had done something like that when he was a player, he got his ass kicked.
Got his ass kicked. I don't know. Like, Nick Saban wouldn't remember me from it. Well, he's pretty sharp. He might remember me. But there's a chance that he wouldn't. I've interviewed him, you know, three times, multiple days at a time. But Ryan, he's one of my favorite coaches of all time. And I found myself, as a neutral, right, as an Iowa kid who went to Missouri before they were in the SEC, Alabama was just an idea. I didn't really care if they won or they lost. But normally, I think it's normal human nature. You don't root for the big dog if it's not your dog. I'm not rooting for the Yankees to win. I'm not jumping up and down when the Yankees win. If they win, I don't really care. But it doesn't do anything for me. And if I didn't have a connection to Kansas City, I'd probably feel the same way. I didn't really mind the Patriots winning until it got old and obnoxious. I liked Nick Saban so much as a person, as a force of nature, as a talent. I mean, that's a part of it. That I rooted for Alabama in every single national championship game that they played in. I think the guy's amazing. I find that clip incredibly, incredibly funny. He is a former coach who's a former coach because he chose to be a former coach. Ed Orgeron is a little bit different. What is he doing now? He's just chilling? He's just doing the media. He wants to get back in.
And he's just living right now being Coach O, being himself.
Coach O.
Coach O. And his.
I mean, come on. We can't come up with a more creative. I'd be Coach R. You'd be Coach H.
You know what? I mean, Orgeron. Why? Is it because. It's like, no, you can say it, but.
Orgeron.
Orgeron. My apologies. Coach
Orgeron. It sounds like a planet that the Death Star would blow up.
I would agree.
Don't get that reference at
That's
all.
That's a Star Wars reference.
That was Alderaan, yeah.
Come on.
Alderaan's been destroyed. Orgeron's next, right? You know? That's what it sounds like, doesn't it?
That's why they keep it simple. Coach O.
Is it because Coach O has, does O have a bit of a ring to it?
Yeah. I think it has more of a ring than Coach H or Coach R.
I knew you wanted to say R. I saw you
well,
veer
I can say
to
Coach
H.
R for Ryan, not just Ryder, but.
That's fair. He does have more of a ring to it. Maybe he's not a coach because he's heaping crazy pressure on Arch Manning. Here is Coach O. I guess this is reasonable, but this is just prepare yourself because I'm going to do it too. I think there's a calm before the storm. That game is a week from Saturday, Ohio State against Texas. And that's a great game anyway. That's just an amazing game. I'm telling you, whether he's good or he's bad, whether he's exceptional or he's pretty good, I think he is going to be at a level of Caitlin Clark. I think he's going to be a bigger story than Shador Sanders was in college. And I do. I think it's going to be everything people are focused on, and it's part of the reason a week and a half out, Coach O, not Orgeron, Coach O is making some pretty sweeping comparisons to the latest Manning to play football at a high level.
We knew Arch Manning as a young kid from Louisiana. He liked Joe Brady. We watched him, but I watched his practice, and I'll say this conservatively, okay? And Garrett, we recruited Garrett. Garrett's a great player. You know, it's kind of, you know, they got some great quarterback here. But Arch is as close to, or maybe as good as Joe, as I've seen.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I've never said that about anybody.
I mean, that's pretty high praise, Coach O, on Pardon My Take, which is a great, now that's a great name. I mean, I'm not taking shots at Orgeron. That's a great name, too. Not as great as Alderaan. Do you know whose planet Alderaan was?
No.
Just take a guess. Star Wars character. Person had to watch their planet get blown up.
Oh, Darth Vader.
No.
Darth Luke Vader. Skywalker.
Nope. His sister.
R2-D2.
Luke's sister.
I don't know her name.
I mean, come on, dude. Are you serious?
I know what her hair looks like. She's got it in the circle, right? Around the ear?
Yeah. No, you crushed it. Pop culture correspondent. Top notch.
That could be the nickname.
Here's my theory. I'm going to run my theory by you, and you can shoot it down. Or if you're listening, you can call me 888-710-4ISN. Tim Tebow was a great collegiate player. He was not a great NFL player. And yet he commanded more attention in the National Football League for his time in it than most quarterbacks. Than most quarterbacks who were playing at a high level. Shedeur Sanders is a fifth-round draft pick. And yet I will happily talk about him at the start of the show any day that I can. Arch Manning may turn out to be exceptional, and he may turn out to be an incredible QB. He is a candidate and a favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. He is going to helm the best team in college football, at least according to the rankings. They are not favored in week one, but nonetheless, they're one of the contenders to win the whole thing. And by the way, there's every reason to believe, and people think that this will happen, that he will play not just this year, but next year as well at Texas and have two more years in college, which will be great for his development and increase the likelihood he can be amazing in the NFL. And yet, if he's not any of those things, if he fails to be all of those things, he is still going to be a massive story. And my theory, Ryan, is that because we live in the social media age, because we live in an age where look, I love doing this radio show, but if I'd done this radio show 20 years ago, I'd be one of seven voices you could listen to. Now there are 700 voices you can listen to. And so you have this overwhelming chorus of noise that's out there, so people are trying to cut through, so they're grabbing for the biggest, loudest thing. I think the fact that reality TV is... I just think that an Arch Manning or a Caitlin Clark or Shedeur Sanders or a Tim Tebow or a Travis Kelce, Dayton, Taylor Swift would not be the story that it was 15, 20 years ago. I just think there's a level of fame, the dial on fame, I think, has been turned way up for people that get into the zeitgeist a little bit. And I think that means, regardless of whether he should be or not, I think Arch is the latest guy, the latest athlete, who's going to be one of the biggest three or four stories in sports until he flames out or retires. And I hope it's the latter. I hope it's retirement.
Agreed, right? The 24-hour news cycle, in part because of social media, helps that. But, I mean, does it also feel like because of that now, because everyone's talking about him, it almost feels like he's, with how people are talking about him and expectations, it feels like it's impossible for him to live up to what people are talking about.
If anybody can do it, it's him, because he's in this unique position where he comes from, obviously, football royalty. His dad is a legend. His uncles are the fifth and ninth best quarterbacks of all time, Eli being fifth and Peyton being ninth. Just kidding, it's a shot at Ryan. How many Super Bowls do they have between them? Four.
Four, each have two.
Eli won as many as Peyton. Peyton
went to double as many as Eli.
And lost.
So there.
Anyway, no, you're right. But the point is, so he had the ability to sort of come up in this historic family, but his dad's not one of those guys. So he got to have the opportunity to understand how to navigate fame, but probably was a little more anonymous till he became a pretty good... I think going to school would be easier to be Cooper's kid than being Peyton's kid when you're a fifth or a sixth grader. He's uniquely probably in a position to be able to handle this because of where he comes from, whose family is, the fact that they've navigated fame before. But I'm with you. The expectations are... What does Arch Manning have to do, and what does Shedeur Sanders have to do to live up to expectations? I would say if Shedeur becomes a starter in the National Football League and is the 14th, if he's Kyler Murray, I think he is a massive success, Shedeur. And what is that? That's 14th or 15th best QB in the NFL? I think if Arch is that in 4 or 5 years, people are going to see that as a disappointment. Even though that's crazy unfair because we haven't evaluated him in any meaningful way because he hasn't played any meaningful games at a clip that we can actually look and go, oh, yeah, this is what he is. Arch Manning, this isn't fair, but I think you're right. I think he has to be a top five quarterback to live up to the unfair expectations that have been set by everybody outside of his world.
And even if you just look at it from his perspective at Texas, let's say the next 2 years, assuming he's there in 2026, which I agree with you, I think he will be. Like, if I tell you right now, he wins a national title, wins a Heisman Trophy in those 2 years. Yeah. Is that like, okay, boom, success?
No. Is Tim Tebow remembered as a success?
Yes. In college?
I don't agree. I think it should be. But people don't make that distinction. If you're sitting around having a beer with somebody and you're just talking football and Tim Tebow comes up, most guys are going to be like, oh, he didn't make it in the NFL. Do you don't think so? It's like failed promise. And he's the best college. He's probably the best college quarterback of all time.
Should we differentiate? I guess that's a different. I guess it's an interesting question because you are right. Like, I would say overall success. Was he disappointed? He was a major disappointment in the NFL.
But we're talking about unfair expectations for Arch. I'm not saying what the analysis should be, right? I'm saying what the analysis is. And I think Tebow's. Look, yes, he's remembered that way, but especially for quarterbacks, it's what have you done for me lately? And in this case, it's what did you do for me in the National Football League? I think if Arch wins a Heisman and wins a national championship, he will be like Tim Tebow, a massive success. A massive success. And I think it will just raise the standards even higher.
So you're saying, let's say he's Tim Tebow in college football and Kyler Murray in the NFL. And again, if you want to look at and combine kind of everything into one football career, if we're talking about 20 years from now, would you say that then he did not live up to expectations overall?
Yes. Let me ask you this. Would you say that, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, which is Jamarcus Russell. Is that his name? Came out of LSU?
Yes.
Is that guy a success?
I guess I've always looked at it, college and NFL separately. I've never kind of combined them into one. Because, like, obviously, at LSU, he was a big-time success. And NFL, he was one of, I mean.
Is Vince Young a success? The answer is no. I mean, here's the thing. Your immediate answer is no. It's not fair. It's not right. But that's the immediate answer.
I would take Vince Young's career, even with the NFL.
That's not the question I'm asking. I would take... I would take Chase Daniel's career tomorrow because I talk on the radio. But that's not. Do you know what I'm saying?
Trevor Lawrence's career at this point
failure. That's a great example. Crazy.
Because he's probably the quarterback most recently with like that hype starting right away.
Vince didn't win the Heisman, right? He did not.
Did not win the.
But
national
he did have
title.
That game-winning drive
against USC
in the national championship game. Yeah,
that is like one of the all-time moments.
One of the greatest moments. So when I think of Vince Young and I think of Tim Tebow, I actually can think of specific plays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Johnny Manziel. I can think of specific plays for Johnny Manziel at A&M against Texas in a game that he lost, in fact. Did Johnny Manziel succeed?
I would say no.
Right, so I think that you're right. Arch, if he does what you're talking about, we should keep him in permanent praise forever. But we don't operate that. It doesn't operate that way anymore. And because of the name on his back, even more so, it just raises the dial on the expectation meter.
So would you say that, just for even forget projecting, would you say that we have, as a media overall, for the most part, set him up to fail for his career?
No. And I don't think it's just the media. I think it's culture. I think it exceeds you and I. I just think that we have set him up for, and by the way, failure, and I've learned this in our business, failure is defined by other people is not the same thing as failure defined by yourself. Not to sound super cheesy, but I've had a pretty successful professional career, but the only way that I judge myself is as a husband and a father. And I understand that that's not what's going to keep me employed, right? I mean, David is probably listening, our boss, and I think David likes me. I'm a pretty good dad. I try to be, and David knows that. But if I start coming on here and, you know, doing rhymes for 12 weeks in a row, you know, start doing Dr. Seuss sports radio, I'm out. So I understand those are different things. But so Arch may be mature enough in a way that poor Johnny wasn't, that he can define success himself. But as a football success, as just a success in this football conversation, not a human being success, I think the poor dude's got to be a top six quarterback in the NFL for 6 or 7 years. And he probably won't because most guys aren't. And I think that's part of what makes him so riveting and why Coach O is talking about him and why he's going to be this big story, because we aren't just interested in what he's going to do against Ohio State. We are, but we are already deep in our brains, like, what's going to happen next week? What's going to happen next year? What's going to happen when he's in the NFL? I don't think there's been a quarterback who's had more expectation come out of college since fill in the blank. I don't know. Because he carries the weight of his expectation of his uncle. Of both his uncles. It's an amazing story. All right, I went super long. I'm sorry. That's my bad, Peter. I'm sorry. All right, let's keep this quarterback conversation going after a sports flash from Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
This report brought to you by Progressive Commercial Insurance. It protects small businesses with affordable coverage options. Quote today at progressivecommercial.com. We'll start with NBA news. Pacers and head coach Rick Carlisle reportedly in agreement on a multi-year contract extension. NFL, Bengals defensive end Ezra Hendrickson told ESPN he and the team are close in agreement on the total average annual salary and the length of the new deal, but the sticking point remains guaranteed money. Quarterback Joe Burrow weighed in on the contract dispute after last night's 31-17 preseason win over the Commanders.
Deals with us have gotten done closer to week one. I signed on the Thursday before the first game. Jamar's started to pick up, you know, that week before last year too. And, you know, we were able to get T and Jamar done early this year, so that was great. But I think historically, the way we've done business is, you know, that tends to pick up here in the next 2 weeks. So we'll see.
I'm Peter Schwartz.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Some poor kid in Arkansas who's never been on the show got picked down by the football coach. He asked a rickety question and the coach, "What are you doing? I'm a bully."
Is that a roar or like an O? Like
on the Infinity Sports Network.
Back into the show on this Tuesday. Bill Ryder with you, and appreciate you hanging out here on the program. Phone number 888-710-4ISN. The idea of expectations is really interesting to me. And I don't think what will get in the way of Arch Manning being successful, if anything does, maybe nothing will get in the way, are the expectations. I think it's going to be NFL-level defenses. I think it's going to be the challenge that faces everybody when you're trying really hard to succeed in a sport where very few people actually at the quarterback position have actual success. In terms of rate of success versus rate of failure, I think there's a strong argument, and I think I'd probably make it, that the hardest job in professional sports is the quarterback. Not the hardest thing to do. The hardest thing to do is hit a baseball, probably. But just how hard it is to be successful. It's part of the frustration I have with Joe Burrow. Just pay Trey Hendrickson. You're the Bengals, and you got the thing that is the most difficult thing to find on the face of the earth. You have a top-level elite quarterback who's not just elite in the regular season. He is elite in the most pressure-packed moments that exist in football. He did it in college, and he did it against the Chiefs at Arrowhead. Is Josh Allen elite? Yes. Is Lamar Jackson elite? Yes. Have those guys beaten Mahomes in a playoff game? No. And that's a really high, unfair standard, but Burrow's done it, and the Bengals can't get out of their own way. Speaking of which, at 888-710-4ISN, we have a phone number. Let's go to Lexington. Chris, what up, pal? Appreciate you.
Bill,
you are back. I'm right with you. What up, dude?
Yeah, well, Bill, first of all, man, because I didn't get a chance to tell you last week, welcome back. I hope you had a great time with your family and back home.
I did.
I'm very happy to hear that. And because I feel like a part of your family now, I gotta give love to your executive producer. I'm running my mail route on Saturday, and unbeknownst to me, I'm listening to ISN as I always do. Boom, 12 o'clock hits, there's Ryan Hickey. And so I just want to say he did an awesome job with his college football show and got a chance to call in. So just wanted to give a little shout-out to Mr. Hickey there for you. So, all right, this Joe Burrow situation – you know what? This is very hard, Bill, being a guy from Pittsburgh to even say this. I feel bad for the guy. I mean, I honestly do. And I'll liken it to, and we capitalized on a window, but then we ended up wasting the back half of Ben's career. And what I mean by that is, when we realized that the ridiculous Cordell Stewart experiment had just basically been a colossal failure, early 2000s, if you remember, we started stacking up on the defensive side. And we kind of did the quarterback carousel, and then fast forward to 2004, and Roethlisberger comes along, and we, I think, capitalized between 2005 and 2010, you know, three Super Bowl appearances, two victories. A But then the worst thing that can happen to a successful franchise is, and perfect example, when we lost to Mr. Tebow in 2012, that once great defense started to get old right before our eyes. And I remember saying it to friends, I'm like, you know what? Because if you look at it, Bill, Ben had just turned 30. And he still, and we wasted, to me, 6 to 7 years on the back half of his career because he was still in his prime. We had Le'Veon, we had Antonio, the offense was there. We could not field a defense to support and, you know, what he was bringing on the other side of the ball. And I just cannot believe that they're wasting what, because who knows? You want to believe that Joe still has years left? You and I both know, Bill. You just don't know. But right now you've got him. What are you doing? And like I said, I feel bad for the guy. I really do.
Dude, I'm with you. It's so brutal, Chris. Thanks for the call, brother. It's hard to watch. As is this breaking news.
Breaking news.
More hard to hear. Ryan Hickey's a Colts fan, and I can see him because he's on Skype. And I texted him before he could text me, "You look perplexed. Is something wrong?" And this is it. The Colts are naming Daniel Jones their starting quarterback, per sources. It's Tom Pelissero. Can I just call him Tommy P? Make it easier? Coach O, Tommy P? Tommy P is reporting that after a training camp competition with Anthony Richardson, it is Daniel Jones, obviously was the Giants starter for a long time, who gets the nod. I mean, Anthony Richardson's career is over. It's over. You're done. You're finished. What a wasted draft pick by the Colts. How bad, how unreliable do you have to be to lose to Daniel Jones when you were drafted with a top pick and they want you to win? They want you to win that job. Ryan looks like he's been slapped in the face and forced to eat cow manure. And I'll say this too, and Ryan brought this up, and I've seen it other places, but Ryan brought it up the first time. Anthony Richardson on that list of guys going back the last 10 years who only started a single season in college and then were drafted in the first round, and all of them have failed except for maybe Kyler Murray, depending how you want to make an assessment on where you would put that guy. Ryan, are you okay, pal?
I now know how you feel as a Bears fan. I'm disgusted. I don't want to watch this. I am rooting for them to lose every game. Tank it up.
I mean, it would be pretty amazing if... Oh, can you imagine the expectations if Arch went to Uncle Peyton's former team?
I'd love it.
The internet would explode.
Don't get my hopes up. Come on.
The internet would explode. I mean, Daniel Jones is your quarterback. Your hopes should be up for this. And my hopes are up that you're going to love Zach Johnson as much as I do because he joins me next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Our next guest is not just an outstanding NFL reporter and host of an amazing podcast. He might, certainly in the running, have the best X handle on earth because Zach Jackson can be found on X at Akron Jackson. That's so good. At Akron Jackson, Browns NFL reporter for The Athletic. Zach, good morning, man. Thanks for making time.
Me and LeBron, just two egomaniacs from Akron.
I like you more right now. I've always probably liked you more. Zach Jackson on the show. Hey, I want to start big picture here and then get into the weeds a little bit. We talk about the Browns a good amount, and people call in and are interested in them, in part because of their quarterback room. I'm wondering, within that community, within that ecosystem, how do Browns fans, Browns media, in Cleveland, what's the optimism or pessimism level for this upcoming season?
You know, it's interesting that you frame it that way, because I think to much of the outside world, it's fascinating, right? And it probably is. It's more exhausting in it, right? So, you know, the Browns have survived with people that always keep a level of optimism. The fact is, for 25-plus years now, it's been one of the worst organizations in sports. This group that's now entering its sixth year has made the playoffs twice. That's like the equivalent of winning five titles in a row, you know, based on what previous groups did. This team is not awful. should not have been a three-win team last year, right? It started last season, Bill, as the most expensive roster in the history of the NFL, then went 3-14 and sold off some guys and didn't finish that way, right? But the vibe now, there's a little bit of optimism. There are some really good players. As I mentioned, Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward are absolutely among the best at what they do on a defense that's got a chance to be pretty good. And then if you get anything offensively, and a pretty good and really well-paid offensive line can stay healthy and stay together, then maybe you can win some brawls. So I think it depends on who you ask, right? And I think it depends on how healthy they stay, because one of the fallouts of the Watson trade is there's just no depth on this team. But, like, this is not a terrible team. And if it wins some games in September and ends up being a thorn for some of the perceived better teams in the league, I won't be surprised.
Zach Jackson here on the show. Zach, forgive my pessimism that is baked into this next question, but as a Bears fan, that's just where I live when it comes to the NFL.
Sure.
Let's just say things go badly for whatever injury, whatever reason, and the Browns have another very disappointing year. What is the state of Kevin Stefanski's seat? Is it hot? Is that a ridiculous question? Is he just fine regardless of whatever happens this upcoming season?
It's not a ridiculous question at all, because they won 11 games in 23 and 3 last year. So you can put any coach in, and that includes the coaches, the coach in the Super Bowl in that situation. And the seat's got to be somewhat warm, right? So I think the answer is, what kind of season is it? Can they stop from players getting arrested and having all these embarrassing headlines? And can they play games in October and November that don't have people flying banners over the stadium saying sell the team and all this stuff? I mean, we don't know how it's going to go. So I think it just depends. But no one should be comfortable. No one is comfortable. In March 2022, they made what looks like the worst trade in modern NFL history. They are paying the price for it. And if that price ends up being that the head coach and GM get swept out here as the roster gets older, and they've already kind of prepared for the reality, you know, they have two first-round picks next year, then I won't be surprised. I think Kevin Stefanski is a good man and a good coach, and I think he's got a chance to put together a season that makes you say, hey, he should be the guy for the long term here. But, man, isn't, in modern NFL standards, isn't 6 years already the long term? So, like,
yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah. Right, like, guys that are here 6, 8, 10 years make conference championship games, win consistently. You know, this team really doesn't have an identity outside of Myles Garrett and pass rush. A lot of that it goes to one trade, but it's just kind of been a very inconsistent, sporadic mess.
Zach Jackson here on the show, a Browns, an NFL reporter for The Athletic, host of the Zach Jackson and Friends podcast on social media at Akron Jackson. What is your expectation or a fair expectation for the level, if he's healthy, that you think Joe Flacco can play at now that he is officially QB1 for the opener?
Yeah, he can still fling it. That's quite obvious. So, you know, Jerry Jeudy is a dynamic receiver. They have two pretty good tight ends in the rookie Harold Fannin, who's really coming along, and David Njoku, who through his career has certainly been more down than up, but the ceiling has been pretty good. So I have a fair level of expectation. Now, do I think that in week 7, one of the rookies might be playing? You know, do I think that Joe Flacco at 40 could get injured? Sure. 11 times since 1999, Bill, the Browns have had at least 3 starting quarterbacks. And my one firm prediction for 2025 is that number will become 12.
Zach Jackson here on the show. I'm Bill Ryder. Who's got the edge right now? Like, what is the likely order of the quarterback room in the depth chart from your best guess and educated vantage point?
Well, the simple answer is Flacco, Pickett, Gabriel Sanders. But there's nothing simple about this. Kenny Pickett has not had a full practice in almost a month because he's injured. You know, he's on a cheap contract. He could be cut. He could be dangled. What do you get in return? I don't know. He also could get healthy and play in a few weeks if Joe fails or gets hurt, right? So, you know, they drafted Dillon Gabriel 50 picks ahead of Shedeur Sanders. And they really like Dillon Gabriel. They used a top 100 pick on him. But then they undercut him by taking a more talented guy 50 picks later. So he's clearly ahead in the eyes of the coaches and how they've done things and just the natural order that you would guess. You know, what that means for October, November, December, when it is time to play these guys. And the owner is on record saying you have to see the rookie quarterbacks. The coach knows that, right? So there is an if, but there's not much if here. So I think that Sanders is clearly the fourth, but if there's one guy on this roster that has any chance to be the starting quarterback of this team in 2027, it's Shedeur Sanders.
That's really interesting, and it is complicated. What? Okay, so Zach, one of the things we've been trying to parse here, and I'm glad you're on because I'm really curious about a reported, educated view on this. Are the Browns then, do you think, willing to carry four quarterbacks on their roster this year?
I think they have to be. I think they always were open to that and never know. But I think the situation, the way it's gone, like people are like, well, you just trade Kenny Pickett and move on. Well, that leaves you with a rookie backup if your 40-year-old gets hurt. You know, then you're really they did that 2 years ago, and they got burned by it. If somebody wants to give you a 7 for Kenny Pickett, like, what do you do with that? You know, I don't know. So might some situation, you know, come up, and might they be able to move on? I think there's still a bunch of ways, but I think the most likely is that they keep the four. They let the first few weeks of the season play out, both from their own perspective and around the league. And then they see, hey, is there a trade market? Do we have to make our own change? Is something present themselves here? So again, I'm pretty confident that we get to Thanksgiving, we get to the end of the season, that one or both of the rookie QBs are going to be playing. But what's the path to get there? Who's on the team at the trade deadline? What you could realistically get for any of these guys? I don't think anybody has a firm answer. And so, again, that's either fascinating or exhausting, depending on your point of view.
Zach Jackson, this next question is a little outdated, but I still want to know the answer, and I'm hoping the audience does. So I'm going to ask you, why did they draft Shedeur Sanders two rounds after they drafted Dylan Gabriel?
Well, I got a feeling that they got a nudge from the head honcho to do that. But I think at that point of the draft, they decided that he was clearly the most talented player on their board. And they looked at their situation. And, you know, this is a fair way to look at it. There's probably one way out of the Deshaun Watson thing, and that's to find your own Brock Purdy, right? A guy that costs nothing, that comes out of nowhere and becomes your starter. And so I know Brock Purdy went in the 200s-something, Shedeur went at 144. But I just think they said, hey, here's a player. Let's give him a chance. And so, of course, it changed the dynamic of everything from the first day of rookie minicamp until right now. Even in them trying to sort out the four because of injuries and things, it hasn't gone a certain way. There's a faction of fans out there who believe that Shedeur should be playing right now, right? He's talented. And to me, like, if he develops in the meeting room, in the weight room, just in terms of getting himself ready, he can be a starting quarterback a year, 2 years from now. Will he have a chance? Guys love him.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And you know, it's just hard for any rookie, right? Like, Dylan Gabriel played 6 years of college football, but he played it all in the shotgun, no huddle, get rid of the ball offense. So they all come here. They have to learn the huddle. They have to learn the playbook. They have to learn their teammates, all of these things, right? And so you don't rush anyone in. And in Colorado, like, of course, there were simple things of the offense. You take the ball, you throw it to Travis Hunter. Like, that's what you should do, right? So he's just got to learn. And I think given time, I think he really does have a chance because the talent since day one has been obvious.
All right, Zach, forgive me for doing the schedule thing, because I know it's hard to sort of know, but I'm looking at it. They start with the Bengals, which is an interesting game, and the Bengals always start slow. Then they've got the Ravens. That's a good football team. Then they've got the Packers. I think that's a good football team. Then they've got the Lions. I know they lost their coordinators, but that was a pretty good football team the last couple of years. Then they've got the Vikings. What is the likelihood that the Browns are able to just get off to a reasonably optimistic and I don't know what good is, 3-2, a good start this year?
3-2 would be like parade worthy, right? play good defense, keep Joe healthy, let him throw it. You know, that Minnesota game is in London, and they come back next week in Pittsburgh, where they haven't won in the regular season in something like 22 years. So that's kind of where you draw the line on where a change might be made. But I mean, do I think that Joe Flacco really gives you a chance to win two or three of those games? Sure. Will it happen? We'll find out, because that schedule is daunting. And obviously, when you take a look at that, week one becomes super, super, super important, because you're probably going to be two touchdown underdogs week two in Baltimore.
Zach Jackson, if you were going to draw up a reasonable list of teams, if someone's going to stop the Chiefs from making yet another Super Bowl appearance out of the AFC, a reasonable list of teams that could do that, who's on there? How many make it for you?
I think the Ravens, the Bills, and the Bengals. And I think if the Bengals get anything figured out, forget everything on defense, I think that offense is awesome. So nobody wanted them in the playoffs last year, and everybody got their wish. But it has to happen for the Ravens and Bills one of these years, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, like I lived in Kansas City for a long time. I covered that Chiefs team. My kids are Chiefs fans. I like the Chiefs. I like Clark Hunt. And even I'm almost getting sick of them. So I think someone's got to be able to beat them. I just don't know who it is.
Yeah, you know, I really liked the Chargers too, but the tackle injury really gives me pause for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. Zach Jackson, this is great, man. Congratulations on all your success at The Athletic, covering the Browns and just the NFL writ large. Congratulations on the Zach Jackson and Friends podcast. Congratulations on being smarter than anyone I know with your Twitter handle, Akron Jackson. So good, dude. And thank you for being on the show, man. I appreciate the time.
All right, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, pal. Zach Jackson on the show. Akron Jackson's great. So you can follow him on Twitter at Akron Jackson. I would not say that was a lot of optimism there for the Browns. I would say that that's a lot more along the line. Man, that schedule is brutal. Now, I know Ryan Hickey loves schedule guessing. It's his favorite thing in radio. It's up there with Star Wars. But if you think the Bengals are a legitimate AFC contender, and I do, they're a dog there, they're a dog in Baltimore, I'm really high in the Packers. I know Ryan's not. 0-3 with Joe Flacco as your quarterback is not an outrageous start. At Detroit is interesting because I think one of the big unanswered questions for me this year in the National Football League is, what does Detroit look like? How does Dan Campbell bite off kneecaps? How does he operate without those two remarkable coordinators, now head coaches? But still, the game's in Detroit, and the answer to the question could be they're good to great. And then you've got a Vikings team that I guess is the weakest link, because there's certainly a world where J.J. McCarthy's not good enough. But 1-4 is not impossible. Then the Steelers. And then things get easier. Then you get the Dolphins and the Patriots and the Jets. Raiders a couple weeks after that. But man, I love the NFL. That is a brutal beginning. Ryan, who's going to have a better season? Browns or Bears?
I will say the Bears.
Okay, thank you.
He's not saying much, but it's something.
The Browns could win 4 games again, because if they get off to an awful start and they're forced to go to a rookie, there's every chance that rookie, whoever it is, Dylan Gabriel, Shador Sanders, are going to struggle. Rookies tend to struggle. And then you have the weirdness of, do you start trying to lose games, or at least not be opposed to losing games? If you're 1-5 or you're 2-7, do you start to look at Arch Manning and go, well, you know, maybe we should give the worst guy in our quarterback room a chance? Because that's one advantage the Browns do have. They've camouflaged their quarterback room so successfully. If they internally evaluate that Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders are not up to the task, but they start them, no one's going to really bat an eye. No one's going to freak out in week 6 if Shador's starting, even if internally it's just a mechanism to get Arch, or if it's Dylan Gabriel.
Which I agree. I mean, genius is a stretch, but like, it's smart in their aspect where they could lose games on purpose while giving the fans what they want in one of the two rookie quarterbacks playing most of the games.
Man, the Arch sweepstakes. But here's the other thing. The Arch sweepstakes may not even be the Arch sweepstakes, because he should go back to Texas. Man, I love the end. All right. 888-710-4ISN. Enjoyed Zach Jackson being on the show almost as much as I'm going to enjoy buy or sell. Ryan Hickey has put together a doozy. He told me this morning, he said, look, Bill, this is the best buy or sell that's ever been put together in the 10 years you've been doing this segment. All right, let's test him. Let's find out. Let's see if Ryan's as big as his words, big as his mouth, next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I have a theory of human beings that everyone's a total weirdo. And with most people, you can't figure out how. With you, we've gotten pretty quick.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Happy Tuesday. I think Tuesdays are the worst day of the week. I'm just going to say that right now. I think they're awful. Awful's a little strong. I'm generally a pretty happy person. But if you're ranking the days, because Monday you kind of know what's coming. Tuesdays are the days, for example, when Daniel Jones gets named the starting quarterback in Indy. They're rough days. You guys are going to be bad this year. Colts are going to be real.
See, I hope so. I don't think they will be. Like, they're not going to be like Browns bad. They're going to be like 7-10.
6-10, yeah.
Which is even worse. Wins. Then you're picking like 13. I don't want to be picking 13. Either be Browns bad and win 3 or 4 games.
Develop Daniel Jones.
Or go to the...
I delivered that well. Let's do buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, Bill, let's start there. Big news of the morning. The Colts have named Daniel Jones QB1. He has beaten out Anthony Richardson, now taking the helm. Buy or sell? Remember, Daniel Jones has taken the Giants to the playoffs before and won a playoff game. Buy or sell? The Colts are a playoff contender with Daniel Jones at quarterback.
Sell, dude.
Sell.
I mean, I know you're a Colts guy. Are you trying to tell me that you think there's an argument the Colts are a playoff team?
No, not at all. I would sell this question to the end of time.
Yeah. I would say, I'm trying to look here, who would be less likely? I mean, there are, every team in the AFC North is a better football team. Three of the teams in the AFC West is a better football team. The Bills are certainly a better football team, obviously. Dolphins, Patriots, Jets. I think the Jets are a better football team. How's that for? And I would take the Texans, obviously, and probably. I mean, you guys are awful.
I think the roster is okay. The quarterback is really bad for a while.
The roster is okay, not exemplary, and your quarterback situation is a disaster. I mean, I guess, in fairness, my answer wasn't going to feel much different if Anthony Richardson got. I thought Anthony Richardson would get the job and fail, but there's a ceiling there that's 2% chance. But what is the ceiling of Daniel Jones? 0.5% chance?
What even is the ceiling? At least we know. Like, I think you could argue that the ceiling for Anthony Richardson truly could be one of the best quarterbacks in the league if he actually, if all of it works out and he hits.
He has the talent.
To your point, it's like the chances of winning the lottery. It's small, but there's a chance. What even is the ceiling? Like winning a $50 scratch off in this equivalent for Daniel Jones?
I think 5 or 6 wins would be much more my guess. I haven't looked at their schedule, but that would be my knee-jerk guess.
What are we doing? All right. I guess let's stick with the NFL. Let's stick with quarterbacks. How about this, Bill?
Okay.
Cheer you up. ChatGPT, relied on by a lot of people. How about this?
Funny.
They predicted who the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL will be this year.
Yes.
And maybe the robots on something. They had Patrick Holmes as the best quarterback in the league, followed by top 5, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, and Justin Herbert. Now, Josh Allen, name you did not hear in the top 5. They have him at 6th. Trevor Lawrence, 8th. Caleb Williams, 9th. And now this is rude. I forgot about this. ChatGPT is Anthony Richardson as the 10th best quarterback in 2025, or will be the 10th best quarterback. Yeah.
Oops.
Got to play to be eligible. So buy or sell. It is more likely that Caleb Williams is a top 10 quarterback this season than Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, buy. Yeah.
Buy.
The ship has sailed on Trevor. We'll see on Caleb. Have you actually used ChatGPT? I have.
I have as well.
It goes bonkers.
It's interesting. It's unique. You can really get some deep dives in there.
I don't want to use it. I don't like it.
I'm shocked you aren't heaping its praises. Caleb Williams is the 9th best quarterback. You're glad they take that. That means playoffs.
Well, it's hard to get excited when the guy after him didn't even win the starting job.
So you're saying it's not 100% foolproof, huh? Who would have thought?
Bye. Yes. Buy. That is what I'm saying.
Speaking of buy, the Patriots could be buying some players possibly before week number 1.
Okay.
As their VP of player personnel, Elliot Wolf, met with the media yesterday, and he was asked if he'll be aggressive in trying to land some big name talents before week number 1. Well, here's his answer.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking to all 31 other teams and trying to do what's best for us, and if something presents itself, I think those things are often a lot more complicated than the fans and some others like to make it believe, but if there's something that we think can help us, we'll definitely be open to it.
Obviously, the three big names that could be on the block, Micah Parsons, Trey Hendrickson, and Terry McLaurin. Buy or sell, Bill, the Patriots should be very aggressive in trying to land one of those three stars.
I'll buy.
Buy.
Why wouldn't you be aggressive in going after Micah Parsons or Trey Hendrickson? And the Patriots have really focused on defense. By the way, can I just say, Elliot, Wolf, what a great name. I don't think we all think it's easy to go trade for people. What are you talking about? I know everyone thinks it's so easy. No, man, nobody thinks it's easy. No one. Your job's hard. Live with it. Deal with it. It ain't my fault your job's difficult. Buy or sell. If the Patriots land either Parsons or Hendrickson, they could be a dark horse playoff team.
Buy.
I mean, they already could have a really good defense.
And you would think an improved offense in year two with Drake May. Stephon Diggs is a better weapon than anything he had last year.
Mike Vrabel's a competitive animal.
And a good coach. Wins a lot
of
games.
Very good coach. Very good. He almost beat the Chiefs in a conference championship game with the Titans several years ago.
Great coach. Does more.
Great
he
coach.
Is one of the best coaches at doing more with less.
I 100% agree.
And Ryan Tannehill, I know it was the Derrick Henry show offensive, but Ryan Tannehill was the quarterback of that game, of that team.
Right.
During that run.
I think they were up 21 in the first half.
And then in classic Chiefs, I think it was 10. I got to look it up. It was like, they had a lead in the first half because the Chiefs that year, every game came back. I think you're thinking of the Texans. They were up 24-0 in the game before.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
And then came back before or wiped away that deficit, I think, before even halftime started.
No. The Chiefs were... Oh, you know what?
Wasn't it like 10-0 or 13-0?
There was a game where the Chiefs were up 21-3 to Tennessee, and Tennessee came back to make it 21-22.
Oh.
Maybe you're right. It's hard for me to remember all the Chiefs' comebacks.
There have been a lot.
It was the other way around. Sell my memory.
Sell.
I'm going to have to increase the old hot sauna time.
Crank it up and make it an extra 5 minutes.
Bro, I've been going 20. I ain't making it 25.
Let's go. Come on. 25. What's that? Five at that point, you know?
A lot. It's a lot.
Speaking of a lot, there's a lot of controversy down in Houstonville surrounding CJ Stroud and his fashion choices.
Okay. Wow.
So he showed up to Saturday's preseason game wearing a Seattle Mariners hat. Now, the Astros and the Mariners are in a sprint for the AL West crown. Right now, Houston has a game and a half lead over Seattle. Now, Stroud said post-game that the hat was only about fashion, but still, nonetheless, a lot of Texans fans or Astros fans did not like that hat choice by one C.J. Stroud. Buy or sell, C.J. Stroud should not have worn the Mariners hat.
Buy.
Buy.
I'm going to say something that a lot of people listening aren't going to like, and if I'm casting dispersions on you, I apologize. But I am very much against... I get angry about the idea of people wearing sports teams' hats or jerseys they don't root for. Nothing pisses me off more than like, oh, man, you're a Barcelona fan? You're a Cubs fan? Oh, you're a Bears fan? No, man, I just like the hat. Well, take it off and shut your mouth. You shouldn't be... I know most people disagree. Like, for example, I love New York City. New York City might be my favorite city. It's my favorite city in America. Second favorite city in the world. And I love New York City. My mom is from New York City. Like my mom is from across the way in Jersey. The joke we have is I grew up in a New York City house in Iowa. I'm not a Yankees fan. And when I lived in New York, I wanted to be able to wear a Yankees hat to just symbolize my love for New York, but I wouldn't do it. You can't wear, I don't care if it matches your shoes or whatever, you can't wear opposing hat, especially when they're playing the other local team when you're a professional athlete.
What if it's like a throwback? Like, what if I came to the studio tomorrow wearing a...
I wouldn't be surprised. You're a fair weather fan.
Mike Ditka 1960s Bears jersey.
No, I don't think...
Like, just throwback towards, like, that's just a great player.
I mean, look, okay, maybe, but no, I don't think so. But the hat thing is just... I have to wear a Cubs hat. That's it. Doesn't match my outfit, don't wear a hat.
And also, you can customize these hats. You can wear an Astros hat in that same color.
That's true.
You can do whatever you want now. It's all customized.
That's true. Guess what? I think if you call the Astros or you have your personal assistant do it, I think they'll send you an Aqua Astros hat, bro.
Like they can accommodate
you, Stroud. There's nothing. I mean, I actually get irrationally angry. I'd be like walking somewhere, like, "Hey, man, go Cubs!" What? What'd you say to me? I said, "Go Cubs!" What's happening? Watch. What? You're wearing a Cubs hat. Oh, okay. I just like the hat. Okay, A, I'm not trying to fight you. And B, shut your face. Shut up, man. You got to at least know the hat you have on.
What'd you say to me?
I said, "Nice. Go Cubs."
Fighting words in the streets, I guess, in some places.
In the streets of Manhattan Beach, yeah.
Speaking of fighting words, let's go to college football, Bill, where we spoke earlier about Greg McElroy's comments where he hinted back at SEC media days of Nick Saban maybe possibly trying to get back into coaching. Nick Saban basically said no, and I would basically fight Greg McElroy if he was still a player for me. Buy or sell? Nick Saban will never coach in the NFL or college again.
Buy.
Buy.
Buy or sell? Nick Saban's at least 72. Does that sound right?
Buy.
Closer to 75 than I think 70 now. I think he.
I mean that's. He looks great. That's old. He's 73. So I guess you're wrong. 73, amigo.
He's closer to 75 than 70. That's mad.
I said 72.
Oh. Okay. Turn 74.
What
on
are
Halloween.
You looking at? Your Cubs shirt. Oh, okay. No, I think he's done coaching. I think he should be. You left on top. You're amazing. He'd have to reinstitute his culture. Nah. Enjoy life taking shots at people with a smile as a broadcaster.
How about this? Have you heard people, Bill, come up to you say, "Oh, man, I love what you do. I'd love to be able to do radio, and that's so cool"?
Yes.
Now fans at home can maybe live the life of one Bill Ryder possibly. Oklahoma football is giving their fans this season a very unique experience in which they are selling passes for fans to attend the post-game media availability for both head coach Brent Venables and the players as well. So, for example, if two fans wanted to go attend the Oklahoma-Michigan post-game press coverage for the Sooners, it would cost $692. Buy or sell, Bill. This is an opportunity Sooners fans should take advantage of.
Sell, first of all.
Sell.
How would you want to be there? You're going to have fans eventually who are cheering or jeering reporters. Oh, boo! This would be like me finding a way to sell, you know, tickets to two fans to go into, I don't know, the Dodgers clubhouse. Come on in! That's Clayton! Go talk to him. He's in his underwear. Don't worry about it. Get in there. No, man. That's a working spot for media.
Also, outside of that, I mean, what if the fans are drunk? What if Brent
makes
a boneheaded decision, they lose the game, and now here you are drunk 5 feet away from Brent Venables?
It's going to happen. Or yell at the media. I have been in press rooms where they've snuck in fans, and then you hear them go, "Oh," when someone asks a hard question, and everybody turns and looks at them. Like, what are you doing? It's ugly. It's not a good situation.
And I guess it's cool if you haven't been there, but the post-game media does not seem cool.
No.
Rather be
it's
like
not
in a pre-game
cool.
tunnel when they run out, like, along the side somehow. That's a lot of money. $350
it's
basically per person?
It's
that's
the
a lot
media's
of money.
Working space. I know everybody likes to hate the media. It's literally their office. Why don't you open up your locker room for five? Why don't you let them walk to the locker room for 5 minutes if you want to bring them into the mix? I think it's stupid.
Let's stay in the SEC, talk a little college football. Maybe not stupid, though, because Auburn yesterday announced they are retiring Cam Newton's number 2 jersey, going up in the rafters. Now, Newton had one of the most prolific seasons in college football history, leading Auburn to a 14-0 record, winning the national championship, and also winning the Heisman Trophy as well. Buy or sell, you agree with Auburn retiring Cam Newton's jersey, despite the fact he played just 1 year for the school?
I'm going to ask if I agree, right?
You agree with their decision.
Bye. Barely. I thought about it. Yeah. It's funny. I was such a Cam Newton guy. I thought people were so hard on him when he was coming out of school. And then the way he behaved, I thought, after that Super Bowl loss was ridiculous. We discussed this earlier. Buy or sell, Cam Newton was a big success.
Sell.
I'm telling you, college career, it's not how you're remembered.
Which is, I know it's a different question. I would, if I was an athlete, take his career every time, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I know.
But
I know it's
dude,
different.
I would take Greg McElroy's career, and so would you.
Yeah, I would as a champion. A I would take, champion, yeah.
I would take Chase Daniel's career, because then I'd have four houses.
Oh, but okay, if you put the money, like, when you're an athlete, you're not thinking about the money or whatever. Like, you're thinking about, okay, what can I accomplish? When you're, like, if I, yes. No, you give me the look, like,
you
sure,
don't have
Chase
a career. You don't
best.
Have a career. Just you would take any career.
Sure, but it's like, but you, when you were, I guess, young and like, okay, what would my dreams and accomplishments be? You never think, oh man, we're the best backup quarterback that's ever seen. No one aspires to be that.
This is like being like, you know, I guess I would date Scarlett Johansson. You guess? Of course you would. That's a question. You know, if you're Ryan Gosling, you can be like, yeah, maybe not. We're not professional athletes. Of course we would take any of their careers. Dude, I would take Doug DiCenzo's career.
But it's like, then everyone's a success. Then that misses the point.
Everyone is a success compared to those that didn't succeed as athletes.
But I think you could also phrase and look at it of, hey, look, you like, would you sign up to be a great college player and a mediocre NFL? Like, Jamarcus Russell is a laughing stock, right? Like, but he's a
yes.
great college quarterback. But
buy or sell, I would take his career is a terrible expression. Buy. Terrible expression.
Buy.
We've just cracked the code on that. We've gotten to the heart of that expression's dumb. Because anybody would take their career.
But, like, I guess, like, if you, like, do you want to be remembered as a laughingstock? I wouldn't be. Like, I wouldn't take Jamarcus Russell's
career. Here's the question.
Career.
Here's the way to reframe
it. Joke.
Who's the most successful backup quarterback of all time by income? It's Chase Daniel. Would Chase Daniel take that career? That's the question. Not would Bill Ryder or Ryan Hickey take that career. Would Chase Daniel take Jamarcus Russell's career?
Basically, or you give him the option, what, to do it all over again, essentially?
Or have his own career that he had. Would Chase Daniel trade? I don't think he would.
That's, I think, crazy. Chase Daniel was a... Chase Daniel, what's the worst that happens? You're a backup again.
But you're not a backup. He didn't make it.
I guess that is the worst case. You know, you get cut and you're never even on.
It's not like you get to relive it. Do you take the career that he had or not? It's not, you don't get to go be Jamarcus Russell and do Revenge of the Body Snatchers. Do you take his career?
I wouldn't take Chase Daniel's career. I would not take Jamarcus Russell's career.
But I'm saying if you're Chase Daniel, would you trade what you had for what Jamarcus Russell had? No.
Oh,
that's the question you should be asking yourself in these situations.
That's a great question. I misinterpreted. My apologies. That's
Chase Daniel would take Vince Young's career over his own, I think.
I would agree with that.
He wouldn't take Jamarcus Russell's career over his own.
I would also probably agree with that.
If you're Chase Daniel, would you rather have your career or Matt Leinart's career?
I would much rather have Matt Leinart's career.
I don't know.
National champion.
I get it.
He's a big-time name because of what he did at USC, not what he did in the NFL.
Did you see his kid? They have a video that says, and I know Matt a little bit. His son asked, who's Matt Leinart of Siri or ChatGPT or something? And it goes, successful quarterback from college who did not amount to much after that. What's
Damn.
His dad said there?
ChatGPT going hard.
Are we no contexting? We went pretty late.
It's time for no context, buy or sell.
We got one here, last one that hits close to home here, Bill. Buy or sell, you respect the Cubs making the decision to bench Kyle Tucker.
I don't respect you asking me that question. I'll buy. He's been awful going back in early July. He and the Dodgers got the same baseball sickness that just made them ineffective. Hopefully, taking a little time off will give a reset. And we're going to reset this quarterback conversation after we get a sports flash from Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
Now we start with the NFL. The Colts have named Daniel Jones their starting quarterback. The Bills reportedly expected to meet with free agent wide receiver Gabe Davis after he meets with the Steelers today. NBA, the Pacers and head coach Rick Carlisle reportedly in agreement on a multi-year contract extension. John Wall retires after 11 NBA seasons. Afternoon baseball, Brewers take on the Cubs in game one of a day-night doubleheader. Bryce Terang homeward for the Brewers in yesterday's 7-0 win. Manager Pat Murphy said Terang is turning into a heck of a player.
I remember Barry Bonds saying to me one time, hey, Homer, if all these guys can go deep bullside, show me a guy that can go deep backside. And you should practice that. He said, that's when you know you got hitters. So kind of interesting. That's the first thing I thought of. But Bryce is, like we've said, he's coming into his own.
First pitch, 2:20 Eastern Time. Brewers have won 15 of 16. Game 2 tonight, 8:05 Eastern Time. Hockey, the Red Wings will retire Sergei Fedorov's number 91 before their January 12th game against Carolina. I'm Peter Schwartz.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on the program, along with Colts superfan Ryan Hickey, where everything is going great. This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. Anthony Richardson. Over. Over. Career over. Barring, can I give you a path forward for your guy? Daniel Jones goes down to injury in the first quarter of game one. Anthony Richardson comes in and throws 7 touchdown passes and turns into insert whoever you want him to be. 3 touchdown passes.
Or alternate reality, Daniel Jones plays okay. The Colts are 1-3. He gets benched. Anthony Richards comes in. He kind of throws gas on the fire. They're like 2-5 in his 7 starts, and they go back to Daniel Jones, and then they flip-flop, and all of a sudden now we're looking at a Colts team that wins like 6 games. They have no quarterbacks, and they're not also bad enough to get like a top-5 pick.
That's a very... You sound very defensive, by the way. You sound like a very defensive person.
Speaking... Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
No,
you're
it was
right.
Good, wasn't it?
That was very good.
Yeah, you're emotional, though. It's fine. You're defensive. Speaking of which, in a kind of different, better way, the Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. After their 14-game winning streak ended Sunday, Brewers starter, easy for me to say, Freddie Peralta made sure the team got right back on the horse as on Monday afternoon, that's yesterday, he mowed down my Cubbies to lead Milwaukee to a 7-0 win. Peralta allowed just 1 hit while striking out 6 Cubs over 6 innings to win his MLB-leading 15th game of the season and remind me that being a Cubs fan is not always fun. Cubs, Colts, Bears, Penn State.
Let's misery. Go.
Total misery. Between the Cubs, the Bears, the Colts, and the Nittany Lions, who will win a championship next?
I mean,
it's not Penn
State.
It's not Penn State.
What do you mean?
They're not going to win this year, and then they're going to fire James Franklin. They're going to have to start over. It's going to be like a redo.
I'll play along. Penn State doesn't win the national title this year, and I think if they don't win this year, it's going to be a while before they actually have a real chance to win.
Sure.
Honestly, I would probably say that number two would probably be the Bears.
I think it's the Bears too. I think the number one is absolutely Penn State. I just don't think they're going to. If you had to bet everything you own in the world on either Penn State wins the national championship this year or the Bears win in the next 10 years, who would you bet on? I would bet on the Bears over a 10-year period.
I mean, sure, you have a longer runway.
I'm just asking you a question.
Nice.
I don't need you to explain the question. I need you to answer the question.
I think Penn State wins this year, so I will put all my
money.
You
every
mean,
single
that's penny
every
I have.
Year you say this.
But now, maybe. But now it's not just me. It's smart people around the comfortable world.
We've had some of those smart people, and they've said they're not going to win it.
I don't remember those answers. I cannot recall. I don't remember Ryan Harris saying that James Franklin is not good enough to win a national title. That just kind of in one ear, not the other.
It would be pretty funny if they lost to Oregon and like say UCLA in back-to-back games.
No, it would not be funny. I'm putting all my emotional eggs in Penn State's basket.
They have a very easy start to their season, by the way.
Yeah, they have some tough ones. Nevada, watch out. FIU.
Nevada, FIU, Villanova. Oregon, but at home, at UCLA, Northwestern.
You're going to go to that game?
At
UCLA?
Iowa.
Watch some real football?
No. Okay. The Rose Bowl's
you can
far,
boots
dude.
On the ground. Come on.
The Rose Bowl's far from my house. All right, so it's man, your schedule is brutally easy this year. Oh, you are going to make the college football playoff. Northwestern at Iowa. Oh, it'll be so funny if you lost to the Hawkeyes. At Ohio State, you're going to lose that game. You don't think you're going to lose to Ohio State?
I'll say this.
Why are you laughing?
They better. No, I just love the Assuredness. That's a loss. No shot there.
At Ohio State? Yeah, kind of.
I'll say this. This is the year, if you're going to beat Ohio State in this year, this is the year to do it. They're a better team than Ohio State.
Host Indiana at Michigan State. Host Nebraska at Rutgers.
Hey, Indiana was a playoff team last
year. It's going to be really funny when you go undefeated and then you lose in the first round of the college football playoff.
Which would be a failure.
To who would that be? Well, you'd get a bye. So it would be an SEC school.
You could say any team, would not matter. It would be a massive failure. If they had an Oregon season last year, you win the conference 13-0 and you get steamrolled like they did against Ohio State, it's the worst season of my life.
How many losses ruin the season? How many losses in the regular season? If you lose to Oregon, Iowa, Ohio State.
If they go 9-3, like you just said, somehow make the playoff and win the national title, best season of my life. Those losses don't matter.
Of course. Who cares if you lose to Michigan if you win the whole thing?
Just like if you go undefeated and you finally beat Ohio State in Columbus and you lose in the first, you lose in the national title game even. It's all for naught. All for naught. It's like Arch Manning hype-wise. It's either you are the best there ever was.
You're setting yourself up for heartbreak, man. Setting yourself up for heartbreak.
I have emotionally removed from the Colts. It's all in Penn State's basket this year.
I'm going to emotionally move on from this conversation because we're out of time. But thank you to Zach Jackson. Thank you to Ryan Hickey. Thank you for listening wherever you are. We appreciate you. This is a lot of fun. We love doing the show, and we hope you come back and hang out with us again tomorrow here on Rider Than You.